Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So what to make for dinner tonight? I know a lot of you out there love to cook, so maybe you woke up this morning thinking about dinner. But first, there's even more pressing question to deal with, and that is, where will you get the ingredients to make tonight's delicious meal? Well, your local supermarket is the obvious answer, but and here's a fact that should cause all of us to hang our heads in shame. That answer is not so obvious in many Massachusetts cities and towns. In fact, a couple of years ago, Massachusetts ranked 48th in the nation when it comes to the number of supermarkets per capita in the state. That's according to the Food Trust, a national advocacy group. Now, here's another way to look at it. In Massachusetts, one of the wealthiest states in the country, there's only one supermarket for every 10,000 people. Only New Jersey and Texas do worse. But there's a fix in the works as well. The Baker administration failed to fund the fix last year, but it could have another chance this year, and we're going to talk about it now. And joining us to do so is Rebecca Gewertz. She's executive director of the Massachusetts Public Health Association. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Also with us is Jenny Silverman, co-founder and board member of the Dorchester Community Food Co-op. Welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much, Meghna.
So first of all, before we talk about that fix to the healthy food access issue in Massachusetts, I just wanted to spend a minute or two talking with both of you about the truth of the facts that I presented here at the top, that really in Massachusetts, a place that we pride ourselves on our wealth and our access and progressive nature, et cetera. I was stunned to find that only Texas and New Jersey do worse than us when it comes to access to supermarkets. I mean, Rebecca, first of all, tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah, it's obviously shocking and extremely problematic. In addition to our low ranking, what you can glean from this, unfortunately, is that the impact is most significant in low-income communities and communities of color, where there is virtually no access in many communities. You know, that is why we are pushing for the Massachusetts Food Trust Program. We know that it works. There are many other states where this program has been effective and have brought grocery stores to communities that need them the most. Yeah. Massachusetts should not be second to third to last. And we have an opportunity to change that. So I'm looking forward to talking about the initiative.
Yeah, so I was seeing in today's Boston Globe, they led with a story that, you know, of people who in Springfield, for example, who have to go 2 miles and several bus trips just to get to the supermarket. Yeah. But also the report from a couple years ago said that if I'm getting this right, per capita rates, average per capita rates of supermarket access around the country, that Boston is 30% worse than average, Jenny?
Right. Well, as you know, I live in Dorchester, and I'm working on a new initiative to build a food co-op in Dorchester, and there the numbers are even worse. You know, Dorchester has, I believe, about 120,000 residents. It's the largest and most diverse neighborhood in Boston. It only has one supermarket for every 20,000 residents, not for every 10,000. And Roxbury, also another community of color in Boston, one for every 16,000 residents. And Mattapan has actually no full-service supermarkets.
Zero.
It has smaller supermarkets, but we're talking about major supermarkets.
Yeah.
So the need, you know, is right here in Boston.
And then the need is tremendous when we describe it with these numbers. Again, we're going to talk about the proposals to fix this problem and to get easier access to healthier foods for everybody. But I do wonder, I mean, you guys have been thinking about this issue for a long time. How did we get here? I mean, we have been talking about food deserts for some time now, but I'm still trying to square it in my head that a place like Massachusetts has allowed these deserts to grow virtually statewide the way they have. How did we get here? What's your thought on that, Rebecca?
Well, it's not just food deserts. It's what we refer to also as food swamps, as places where there is fast food restaurant after fast food restaurant and nothing else for many, you know, for long distances, you know. I think, and what we've talked about a lot with our partners at the Food Trust, is that there, you know, has been a disinvestment in low-income communities in particular, back to the time of redlining. In fact, I had the opportunity to look just on Wikipedia today about the definition of redlining. It was talking about not just limiting access to banks, but also supermarkets, too, could be one example. So I think there's a long history of this, a troubling history of this. You know, I think also another factor is that many grocery stores run on thin margins.
Well, I was going to say, is there a sheer dollars question here? Like that is, they don't find it, whether or not it's true or whether or not we like it, the supermarkets themselves don't find it profitable to be in these neighborhoods.
I think there is some concern around that. They're, you know, they do market analysis. Maybe they see they're not going to turn around as much of a profit, and so they choose a different community. And that's why the state needs to come in. And this is a really small investment for a huge return, because it's not just healthy food. That's it's jobs. Yeah. It's economic development.
Let me just get Jenny Silverman back.
Sure. And when you drive around my neighborhood, you actually see the disinvestment right in front of you. When you drive down Washington Street, when you drive down Talbot Ave, you see the buildings that were supermarkets. They look like they were supermarkets, and in fact, they were. Now they're oftentimes social halls, churches. You know, this is not true only of supermarkets, bank buildings. Banks are not in these neighborhoods as well. So, you know, the disinvestment was real and has happened quite a long time ago, and so these neighborhoods have done without grocery stores for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about Massachusetts' dearth and lack of easily accessible, healthy food in many Massachusetts cities and towns and communities. According to one study several years ago, we ranked 48th in the nation in regards to the number of supermarkets per capita. And I'm wondering, listeners, what you see out there. How close is your local supermarket? Is it not very local at all? When you just want to run to the store to pick up milk or vegetables or chicken or fish for dinner, how far do you have to go? And as Jenny was saying, have you seen supermarkets leave your neighborhood? And if so, what has come in their place? Obviously, there's a big health impact to this. There's economic impacts. We just want to know what the sense is of the food environment where you live. So call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet. We're at Radio Boston. So Rebecca and Jenny, let's talk about the potential solutions here, because we mentioned that last year there was a fix in the works that was approved by the legislature. Mm-hmm. What was that fix?
The Massachusetts Food Trust Program, which was passed into law in 2014 as part of the Environmental Bond Bill, and it authorized the administration to appropriate $2 million for this program. The administration has not yet done that, and so our push is on now at MPHA and with our partners on the ground all across the state to urge the administration to release that funding and to make that funding available.
So, and what would $2 million be able to do, though? It sounds like, honestly, a minuscule amount of money.
That's true. It's not a huge amount of money, but the fact is you don't need a huge amount of money sometimes to seed some of these stores. If you look at a store, for example, like the store in Brockton, what was needed was $500,000. It was a $20 million project, and that was, it leveraged all this private money. So it's a complicated sort of thing to describe, but it works through a community development financial institution.
It's seed money,
essentially.
Exactly. Okay.
That's exactly right. But it also isn't just for grocery stores. It's for corner stores and bodegas and other non-retail establishments, for co-ops, for other places that might need a low-interest loan or a smaller grant. So you think about that money, and actually could go quite a long way when you're talking about outfitting a bodega or a corner store to be able to sell more fresh or healthy options.
Okay, hold that thought for just a second, because you did mention co-ops, and Jenny, that's what you do at the Dorchester Community Food Co-op. Can you just describe a little bit of your work and how this $2 million seed money could or even a portion of it could assist that work?
Sure, that would be great. Well, what a number of us did starting about 4 years ago in Dorchester, and by us I mean long-term residents of Dorchester that looked around and decided that we really needed to have more healthy food options in our community, is we decided not to wait for some outside vendor to come in and build the store, but that we could do it ourselves. And in fact, there are many, many food co-ops across the whole country where community residents get together and build a store that's owned by the community. In our case, it'll be owned by the community and the workers in that community and build the kind of store that we really want to have there. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the stores in Dorchester are often perceived to be low-quality stores, and we really want to have good, local, fresh, affordable food that is accessible to all the different groups in Dorchester, all the different socioeconomic groups, ethnic groups, racial groups. And so that's what we've been working on. And yes, a little bit of money from this food trust would go a long way in terms of helping us build our project. You know, a grant or a loan of $100,000 would help us raise the rest of the money that we need for our project.
And I do also want to point out that we are going to advocate for more. We're going to advocate for additional funding. We want to, you know, this is what was put in the bond, and so we want to see this money released, and we know that more funding will obviously help the program even more.
Well, how much, so if I can just inject just a little bit of skepticism here, mm-hmm. how much of a difference would, maybe facilitating corner stores or neighborhood bodegas to, I don't know, have an extra refrigerator to have more space in their store for fresher, perishable foods? I mean, would that make a big difference? Or do you really need, like, a larger establishment to come in and provide the whole gamut of fresh and healthy options for a neighborhood?
I was going to say, I think we need both.
Exactly.
I think we need both. I think that for, you can't have a large grocery store on every block. That's not sustainable in terms of the sales volume that's needed. So, and a lot of people don't have transportation, particularly low-income people. So being able to walk to your corner store and being able to get some fresh vegetables is really important. We looked at the 20 bodegas closest to where we're going to build the co-op, and there were very limited amounts of fresh vegetables in these stores, mostly potatoes and onions, and that's not going to lead to a healthy
diet.
Does
the supply chain exist to bring more fresh produce to the bodegas and corner shops?
Yes, I believe it does, and certainly there's a huge amount of attention being paid in the state to local agriculture. Urban agriculture, in fact, has been approved in the city of Boston. So there's a lot of work being done. All of these ventures are going to be working together to create a whole system that can support healthy food access in our in all the communities in Boston, mm-hmm. and including the low-income communities where people really are very, very interested in improving their diets.
Well, we got a tweet here. We've received a tweet here from Corey James Holmes, who says it would be nice to live walking distance to, for Corey, a Trader Joe's for a quick shop. Instead, Corey has high-priced, low-quality corner stores where he is. The calls seem to be coming in. So Rebecca Gewertz and Jenny Silverman, if you just stand by for a second, let's let some of them in. Alicia's calling from Lawrence. You're on the air, Alicia.
Thank you for having me. And I just called because I wanted to speak briefly about our response to our food access problem here in Lawrence. We have over 77,000 residents within our city, and we have one supermarket within city limits.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a few healthy fast food restaurants. So we're trying to help our food access problems by doing the Healthy on the Block, Bodegas Saludables, Healthy Corner Store Initiative here in Lawrence to respond to some of those problems that we're having with high levels of obesity and chronic disease management within the city.
Right.
The UMass Extension Project have been working within the schools to really talk about healthy eating and the importance of moving. And we've had other groups in the city also working to do some of that. And so with 90-plus bodegas in the city, we thought it would be an ideal project to help to show, first of all, that bodega owners can make some contribution to health in the community. And how they can do this is by really working with them to offer higher quality fresh fruits and vegetables to their consumers in the city.
And Alicia, how far have you come along then?
So this is still a relatively new project in the city. We're just coming out of our first year. We've had challenges with doing this project, and so we've successfully signed on 9 bodegas to the project, and so we're really working with Mill Cities Community Investments to do some TA.
Yeah.
We're working also with Groundwork Lawrence, which is our environmental food justice group in the community, to work with these bodega owners to offer some higher quality fruits and vegetables.
Well, Alicia, let me just jump back in here because I'm very grateful for your call and for sharing the efforts that are going on in Lawrence. I mean, really interesting. One supermarket in all of Lawrence and those 90 bodegas, which I presume provide, as Alicia was saying, 90 potential opportunities in various Lawrence neighborhoods. Before I get a response from you, Rebecca and Jenny, let me take another call here. Bob is calling from Wrentham. You're on the air, Bob.
Hey there, how are you? I just wanted to point out that funding is only a small portion of being able to site a supermarket in the community. I was on the planning board in my town for 6 years, and we as a board wanted to attract supermarkets to the community, but you run afoul of zoning because oftentimes the available land is not zoned for buildings of the sizes that the supermarkets find profitable. And then when you bring those proposals to the community, the abutters and people who live in that general area are resistant to changing the zoning because they don't want to deal with the increased traffic and the potential changes to their neighborhoods.
Bob, thank you so much for your call. So Rebecca and Jenny, let me get your response to that, because I was actually wondering the same thing. I mean, we have been talking about leveraging opportunities where they exist with corner stores and co-ops and bodegas. But in the case where a community does want a larger supermarket and is trying to make that possible, what about these structural issues that Bob was talking about?
Yeah, I think the structural issues do exist. A grocery access task force was convened several years ago that was looking at all of the factors that make it difficult for grocery stores to enter communities, or really to make healthy food access a difficult proposition. And one of the issues is planning and development. The Healthy Food Financing Initiative is one of 3 recommendations. You know, the other one is planning and development, so adopting food retailing as a priority by assisting with land assembly, expediting permitting, making available and marketing existing public incentives that may exist to already do that, and also community partnerships, mm-hmm. and access to SNAP, you know, because people need to be able to afford food once it's available. So there, I think the caller is absolutely right. There are other barriers and other areas where we need to work. I think this is one critically important piece of the puzzle is the Massachusetts Food Trust Program.
Jenny, did you have a thought on that?
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, in particular, I had a thought for the previous caller. So the barriers for bodegas and corner stores and having fresh food are twofold. One is having the means to store the food. So the food trust can really help by providing funds to buy a refrigeration unit or something that would make it possible for the store to keep that food fresh. The second problem is purchasing. You know, these are very small stores, and so purchasing the food at a price that's affordable is an issue. And so I think developing systems where we're working together to create a new food system. The co-op, for example, is planning to have a purchasing program for the surrounding bodegas where they can purchase through us as a larger purchasing network, and we can provide the vegetables at a better price. And then they would, of course, need to have the refrigeration units that they might purchase from the funding from the food trust. So mm-hmm. I think that there's no just one fix for this. We need to be working together to thinking about how to bolster the existing institutions, how to build the new stores that are needed, and work together to improve food access for all in the state.
Now, this links us back to something that, Rebecca, you had mentioned a little earlier, and I didn't want to forget, that there's a potential economic boon when you do bring in either, when you enhance access through bodegas or corner stores or actual supermarkets into communities that didn't, or neighborhoods that didn't necessarily have that before. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is not a program that came out of the sky. This program has worked in other states across the country. The Pennsylvania Fresh Food Financing Initiative has supported 5,000 jobs. The California Fresh Works Fund created or retained over 1,300 jobs. And in New York, there were similar results. So we know that once you can bring a grocery store to a community that's in need, you not only improve access, but you improve the economic circumstance of that community. You increase property values. I mean, look, for example, at what happened recently in Brockton. Are you familiar with the new grocery store, Vicente's, that went in? Well, there was a new grocery store. It partnered with a community health center and opened. And it was this was a blighted corner where there was crime. There were other activities that were going on there that were problematic. They came in and transformed that whole part of the neighborhood. Property values are going to go up. Jobs have been created. It's a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And it's very little amount of money that can create that ripple effect in a whole community.
Well, I mean, the other ripple effect, which in a way seems obvious, but we haven't actually touched upon, is the health effects. I mean, that's sort of what underlies all of this.
Yeah.
I was reading one of the reports from the Food Trust, and it's, you know, it mentioned that in Massachusetts, I believe it's a third or possibly more than a third of children when they begin school in Massachusetts are already arriving obese.
Yeah. Right. And we know that the communities of Dorchester, Mattapan, and Roxbury, where they have the limited access to food, also have some of the highest food-related diseases in the city. So the both diabetes and obesity, which are directly related to diet, those rates are sky high there. And we think that by creating more healthy food options, we can cut into those high rates.
We have startling health disparities in the state. We have supposedly these really good outcomes when you look at charts, but then when you start looking at the differences between when you look at racial, when you look at people's race, when you look at people's income, you cannot believe the level of disparities there are in health outcomes in this state, and this is one of the pieces of that.
Well, let's get one more quick call in here. Chris is calling from Waltham. You're on the air, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Waltham is it seems like a city in flux as well, with actually a lot of great growth, but it seems like every new thing that goes in is like a mega store, like a Market Basket or something like that. And that certainly doesn't make, you know, those things aren't quite walkable for many people. So how does what you guys are discussing dovetail with that type of issue with these kind of big box grocery stores, in the same way that mom and pop hardware stores have kind of disappeared with the advent of Lowe's and Home Depot? How do you guys work these ideas in with what at least I perceive as the same thing with very, very large kind of super grocery stores?
Hmm. Well, you know, that is why we're building a food co-op in Dorchester. And, you know, this is an interesting time period. The growth in food co-ops right now across the country is very, very high. There are many, many initiatives to start food co-ops. I think for this very reason is that communities would really like to control these stores. In the past, outside owners have removed their stores from these community, and we think that by owning the store ourselves, and by the way, it would not be only the members of the co-op that could shop there. Anyone is welcome to come and shop in the store. It's open to all. And it really will be built to serve the needs of the community by the people who live there, who know best what we need.
You know, it's interesting. Over the past several years, we've seen frequently how Massachusetts residents are very passionate about their food and where they buy it and who's selling it to them. We can name the number of stories that we've covered about those issues. But Rebecca Gewirtz, last quick question to you in the last couple of seconds that we have. Again, I keep coming back to the fact that it's just $2 million. Granted, I know the state's had some budgetary concerns over the past several years, but how confident are you that perhaps this year the money will come through?
That's a very good question, and we're working very hard on it. Our model and our work at the Massachusetts Public Health Association is to work with our partners on the ground. And our partners on the ground in communities most impacted have said this is a top priority issue. And so they are reaching out. They are reaching out to the administration, and we are working hard. The article in the Globe that you saw today, us talking about this today, I think us ringing the bell and raising the alarm on this is going to really help to get that money released.
We can do better than 48th in the nation.
We sure can. Thanks, Magna.
Well, Rebecca Gourds, Executive Director at the Massachusetts Public Health Association, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jenny Silverman, co-founder and board member of Dorchester's Community Food Co-op, thank you so much for coming in as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, keep your comments coming about supermarkets in your neighborhood. Send us those tweets at Radio Boston. There's more of the show in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.